You're listening to Dolphinville Radio. This is your host, Dolphinus. Welcome aboard. All right, this is Douglas Dolphinus. I'm talking with Jean Ederman from France, a character whose name may be familiar to you because he really stimulated the first series of Dolphinville radio shows with Joan Ocean and I for the theme of just saying yes. This was a letter that was circulating in the internet some 2 years ago, in September to October, and it was something that took us all by storm because the nature of the letter itself contains so many layers of meaning for everybody who has been interested in following the subject of ET contact. We're really privileged to have him here on the Big Island. This is part of a seminar that Joan Ocean has been conducting called Meet the Andromedans. So he's been here as a pleasure, brought here by Dr. Michael Sala, and we'll be giving a presentation here on the Big Island next week, right at the Sheraton Hotel, Monday, August the 15th. So if this program is here, you're hearing this program before August the 15th, 2005, you'll be able to actually see Jean in person, and as he presents this information. So if not, just sit back and relax. I think we're going to cover some interesting territory. I was privileged to hear him speak yesterday, and I can say safely that his information will raise your level to another way of thinking. He is about to release a book in France. It is called The Science of Extraterrestrials. And it does discuss his experiences and also the information that they have been so generous in sharing with him that will, when it is propagated throughout the scientific community, effectively change the paradigm with which we are thinking and acting on the physical plane. That's a big hunk to think about, but relax and enjoy Jean Ederman. Welcome to the show, Jean.
Thank you very much to welcome me. I'm really happy to participate in this seminar with Joan Ocean and to be with Michael Sala too to discuss about exopolitics. So I'm quite proud to be here for the first time in the United States in Hawaii, especially for this seminar, and I'm happy to participate with other people really interesting and interested in the ET matter and the connection with dolphins, too.
Well, of course, we here at Dolphinville here, our main theme is to connect people with the dolphin consciousness. Joan, for years, has been saying that the dolphins are actually extraterrestrial, as to say they're not of the land. And this is your first experience actually swimming with dolphins, is that correct?
It's correct, absolutely. And I do enjoy it because it's really marvelous to be close to them and to see their intelligence, which is absolutely brilliant.
Well, some people believe that they're much more intelligent than humans, and I would not disagree with that. The fact that they've evolved a lifestyle which is stress-free, culturally and socially very well managed. They have lots of fun all the time, all the food they want to eat, and all the sex they can have. So I guess they would be more evolved than humans.
What is really impressive is their freedom, you know. They do what they want, and they live how they want to live.
Absolutely.
Not totally as the humans.
Well, how was it that you were contacted and knew to come, knew that this space was available? Was it through Dr. Michael Sala that you knew that you could come to Hawaii at this time?
I'm afraid I've understood.
How is it that you came to Hawaii now?
Oh, yes. So I have met Michael Sala on the internet, you know. Because he was interested with the message coming from the ETs, which is in fact a question, a world referendum. Do you wish that we show up? This message was translated by people who I don't know, you know, in 15 languages. It was really impressive because I thought that it was a simple message for people, but in fact it has touched the heart of the people, really, and they spontaneously translated, you know, it's really wonderful. And now I think that it is translated in other languages too, in Chinese, Japanese, or Russian too. But I don't know, unfortunately, I don't speak Russian, Chinese, or Japanese. so I'm not able to check if it's already translated. But what I can say is that people were really interested in, even the skeptics were interested, you know. I've seen different articles about it where people, even there are skeptics, speak about the message. So I think it's a message which is really important for our faith, because for the first time, I think, in the history, it is asking human beings to be in touch with them. Mm-hmm. This is, I guess, maybe one of the most important invitation of the humanity history, to be in touch with other beings out of the world. Mm-hmm. And I think that it will be most important in the future due to certain events that it has to be occurred.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go farther into this subject, let's back up time and space a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us in the audience would be interested to know how you came into this position. Just briefly, you share that you were trained in aeronautics in the French military. You actually trained to be a fighter pilot. You were an air traffic controller. You were a commercial jet pilot. So you're very familiar with aerial phenomenon. This is, you're not a naive person. You're extremely intelligent. And yet you say throughout your life, we began talking before the taping here, that even as early as 7 years old, you began to have what people would consider extraterrestrial experiences. Perhaps you can give us an outline of some of these experiences from these earlier ages and how they led up to being actually contacted and transported above upon the ships. I think I would like to hear that.
Yes, thanks to say that I have a large experience in the aviation industry, because maybe listeners have to know that I'm irrational, you know, very irrational. So I began to be fighter pilot training in the Air Force, French Air Force, and I've been air traffic controller on radar and on the tower, in the tower, for 5 years. Then I've been a commercial pilot with the jet, and then I've been station manager for an airline company, and at last I've been airport manager for two airports in Paris. So I'm postgraduated degree in science economy. Oh, no, economic science, excuse me.
Mm-hmm, that's
give me a favor just to forgive my bad English. You know.
You're doing it very well.
Thanks. And an airport senior manager certificate from the National Aviation School of mm-hmm. France. Mm-hmm. So, in saying this, I just want listeners to be aware that I am someone who is not close to the foolish things, you know. I am really rational, and when I have when I speak about my experiences, I try to explain that these experiences are real, because I used to check each time I could do it what was the reality of this.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 7 years old, I've been reached by a stone in the center of the front, which has opened my consciousness to the stars, because I've seen at this precise moment.
No, let me understand. Field. It was a stone that you felt on your third eye. Is that correct?
No, in fact, I was in little hill, you know.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to climb this hill.
Okay.
And curiously, a stone go down alone.
Oh, single stone, pebble.
Yes, a single stone without any origin known.
Okay.
You know. And it has touched directly the center of my front, and after I've seen many stars just after this this incident, mm-hmm. you know. And, well, my, what it's called, third eye has been opened, and I used to feel it as something which is an electrical field mm-hmm. in my head, and I do feel it behind the skull itself.
That's a pituitary gland.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I was 21 years old, I clearly feel this field, and sometimes when I'm concentrated on it, sometimes I could say most of the time, I clearly feel it, you know. It's something really, really strong. And even if I have the eyes open, you know. When I was 33, it was what we call the crown chakra, which was opened. I don't remember exactly the circumstances of this opening, but what I have to say is that it's something really clear. You know, when you have a sensation of heating, for example, it's clear for your body, you know. This is the same thing, except that it is behind the skull, you know, this is in the brain. It's something really different and really, it's quite soft, you know, because you have to be concentrated on it, to close your eyes, and it's really smooth, you know, it's something that you have to, you have to be, or to develop feelings, you know, inside.
Well, some people who reported third eye openings or crown chakra openings, it's also accompanied by certain psychic phenomena, such as telepathy or clairvoyance. Was this the case with you? Did you have other things accompanying?
Oh, yes, for sure. I remember one time I was in Paris with a friend of mine. She asked me, where is your car? And it was really complicated to explain her where was parked my car, you know. And so I told her, well, let me explain to you. And I was concentrated on the plate of the car, and she told me suddenly, oh yes, that's it, I know where is your car. Mm-hmm. Oh, really? And she explained to me what were my car and at the exact position where I have visualized the car plate, you know. Mm-hmm. It was extremely interesting for me to discover this kind of communication, you know. Mm-hmm. It was really impressive. Then after, it wasn't always the case, you know, but I often experienced this kind of communication without any words. And it's useful sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, many of us who swim with dolphins have experienced the phenomenon whereby an image in its totality, almost as I call a holographic bubble that contains not only visuals but also an experiential awareness that seems to be transmitted by the dolphins. This is a form of telepathy that has been shared and experienced by many, many people. Would you say that it's similar to that experience in description?
Yes, even recently with dolphins, I have felt their presence far away from my body, you know, mm-hmm. and I have had pictures in my mind looking at the dolphins phenomena that has occurred some minutes after, I mean, you see. It was really interesting and impressive too, you know, mm-hmm. to live something which is already lived before, mm-hmm. but just in your mind. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
And have the experiential feeling as if you had that event in your life as well, not just the memory. Well, some of what you shared in last night's presentation from your personal standpoint covered some of the classic areas of close encounters. I was fascinated to learn that when you were an air traffic controller, for example, you had an interesting experience on the radar screen. Perhaps you would like to share that story with the audience.
Yes, for sure. So I was on the radar. It was about 11:30. Most of my colleagues were at the restaurant of the base, the French base, at Reims, you know, the base 112. And we were three on the approach room, in the approach room, and I've been in front of my radar to receive a plane and to control it to the runway. And suddenly I have seen a target, a spot, you know, on my screen. And I was really, impressed by the speed of this target, because it's not the real speed of the plane normally, even the fighters, even the missiles too. You know. So I asked the technician if there were any problems to check the screen. He told me no problem, you can go on. So I was really, I wonder what was the target, and have changed the scale of the screen just to check if it wasn't a technical problem, you know, and have changed from 50 to 100 miles, and the target was also here, where was continuing his path. From east to west, it is the opposite of the satellite course, mm-hmm. or curves. So I was impressed, and as I know that a radar antenna makes a turn in 7.5 seconds, you know, it was easy for me to calculate the speed, which was 15,000 knots.
15,000 knots. That's faster than any known craft built by humans, correct? By several thousand miles.
Yes, it's impossible for human technology to reach such speed. You know, it's impossible.
Yeah,
we have even today. I mean,
right. Well, the space shuttle only goes 2,000 miles an hour.
So, in fact, we could think that satellites have this speed. You know,
mm-hmm.
but it's impossible for such an antenna
mm-hmm.
to reach higher altitude of satellites, because it's limits it's very low.
So you would say the altitude of this object was obviously within the radar range, but what would that be for the equipment that you were using?
So it could be maybe 100 meters to 1300 meters, you know.
Wow.
It's impossible to to know it, but
that's
the speed was really really impressive.
Now, obviously, was there any reportings that would also confirm at the same time that people, of course, something traveling that fast, it's going to be difficult to even see with the naked eye, and if it doesn't have lights blinking, or if there is not another radar screen, chances are that nobody could have seen it from the ground anyway at 11:30 at night.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, you know, it's so rapid that even if you make a scramble of the fighters, it's impossible to follow them, you know. It's
Now, you chose not to report this, and for a good reason. You said that you didn't want to take on the, what we would call in the United States, flak of ridicule and skepticism that would come along with such a report.
Yes, that's right, because I have prepared the officer examination, you know, and I didn't want to have any problems with this kind of report, you know. In fact, you know, the controllers, even if they are military in France, I don't know if it's the case in the USA, but they don't want to be ridiculized by their hierarchy or anyone else. I mean, so even the fighter pilot don't speak about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that one of my colleagues, who was an air traffic controller too, with 20 years of experience in air traffic control, have reported a sighting, really impressive too. But it was a saucer above in a stationary position above the headquarters of the French air base at Reims. You know, at night it was about 10 p.m. in the summertime. And he has seen this saucer during 10 minutes above the headquarters. Of course, any civilian report was communicated to the public.
Right.
But he was skeptical, mm-hmm. it was really impressive for him to have such a sighting. And what is interesting is that as an air traffic controller, he has asked if this saucer was on the radar screen, you know? He has asked the colleagues at the same time. And of course, it was impossible to have such a target or such a spot on the radar because it was on the base itself. Mm. It means that it was with the other obstacle, natural one or artificial one, right. of the base. So he was really troubled with the sighting. Mm. And after 10 minutes, about 10 minutes, the UFO came out. I mean.
Very rapidly, I presume.
Oh yes, really, with a very great acceleration.
Mm-hmm. This is Dolphinville Radio, brought to you by Photon.net, your internet service provider. Dolphinville Radio, welcome. Mm-hmm. You reported also some other close encounter sightings, which is a certain category of close encounters. One of them was a family member, if I recall. Perhaps you could share that experience as well.
Yes, it was in 2003. We were moving from a house to another one. It was in the north of France at Arras. And my wife and two of our children were in the previous house to take the last furniture and so on, you know. And it was about 7 p.m., the night was here, and they've seen many lights in the sky, like an aerial battle, you know. It was for them really impressive to see such lights, about 15, you know, 15 lights in the sky. But when they were in the previous house, they've seen, first of all, it was this, my son, we've seen a triangle craft hovering the house at about 15 meters above, you know, and with three lights at each corner mm-hmm. of the craft. And when my wife went out the house, so I have to say that my son was scared, absolutely, you know. He was...
How old is your son when he saw this?
13
okay,
years old.
Okay, so he's not a baby.
Oh, no. No. And my wife saw the craft too, but going out the area very rapidly with an acceleration which is impossible for our human technology.
Were they aware of your experiences at that time?
Oh, yes. In fact, they have shared many of my experiences. In fact, my family has had their own experiences. Mm-hmm. I have my own experiences too. And so they believe when I explain what I have experienced. You know.
Okay.
So, and I have to say that many of the people I have met in my life has had such experiences too, you know. When you live yourself such experiences, it is really different because it is real, you can speak about them naturally. I have to report another sighting made by one of my daughter. It was in the Mauritius Island, and she saw a saucer at about between 100 and 300 meters from the house where we lived. And she was in the swimming pool, you know, playing at 10 p.m. again. And she looked at the sky, and suddenly she saw many lights, you know, two circles of lights, which were concentric. And she saw the saucer with a speed of a normal plane, you know, but very low, close to the earth. And she was just enjoying the sighting, you know, without any fear. And what she was exciting with is was the lights with many colors, you know. And she saw the saucer going behind buildings, like a landing, you know. so after she has forgotten to speak about it just after her sighting, and she reported it some weeks after, you know, because she thought that it wasn't very important, in fact, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was impressed by her natural behavior to explain it.
Very casual.
Absolutely.
And is she older or younger than your son?
Oh, she were about 12.
Okay, so about the same age.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not infants, and they're not subject, as some parents might say, to active imaginations.
Oh, no.
Usually children are accused of having active imaginations whenever they see something that adults can't explain. So these would be categorized as visual close encounters. Last night you were going over several layers or different levels of close encounters. I was impressed with the story that you talked about. And a lot of this has been building, although you've had encounters earlier on, but this has been building over the last few years, so that the experiences that you've had have been becoming more vivid and more extensive. You spoke of one experience, which I believe I understood it was like a remote viewing session where you were allowed to visit an underground base in the Great Lakes region. And can you explain how that came about and what led up to the experience, and then share some of what that was like with the listeners?
Well, yes, for sure I have to say that I've experienced many kind of encounters or experiences, from sightings to very vivid presence in a ship. Well, as you said, this is a process which is quite progressive, you know. We begin by psychic contacts, and after an experience of such a contact with a creature which was about 5 feet, that's right, with a big head, with large eyes, with blue skin, with some light point, you know, with a very peaceful face, really impressive, you know. It was like I see you, you know.
Well, this came as a psychic encounter?
Yes, I speak only about the psychic encounter.
Mm-hmm. So, the earliest experience with what you call the blue skin aliens, and just so that the audience understands this encounter, was the classic symbol of the large head and the large almond eyes that wrap around nearly the skull.
Mm.
But also what was unique was that it was very porous. The skin had pinpoints of light that seemed to emit a radiance from the inside of this creature.
Absolutely.
As if the inside was made of this brilliant light, and it was poking out in all directions from its skin.
Absolutely.
Which was pretty extraordinary.
Yes, I was impressed by this creature. So I don't like to say creature, because it's more than this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It is really a guide, you know, with a large, very great wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who has come after having calling him,
mm-hmm.
or having called someone else, you know, and he came.
Well, this is important now. In your mind, in a meditation, let's say, you were opening up to the possibility of calling in guidance.
That's right.
A spiritual guide or some kind of outside intelligence other than human to come to you. Now, what predicated that? Why were you asking?
Why? Because, you know, you always have doubts, even if you have many evidences of their presence, even if they are physical.
Okay.
So I could explain many cases, but, you know, it's absolutely normal, as I'm rational, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I need okay. some other evidences. So
you wanted proof.
I want a proof,
yeah.
Like everybody, you know.
Sure.
So, but you know, when you leave something which is so vivid, you are sure, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So this is something which is really personal. but at the same time, you need to share it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I had begun to understand it with this progression of contacts. So, once I've lived this contact with this very marvelous being, I have had another contact, and this time it was a telepathic appointment, you know. I have been told to see the sky between 11 and 12 p.m. at night, and I was so tired, so I have slept. I mean, and suddenly the dog of the house barked, you know, very loudly, and I, instead of looking at the dog, I have looked at the sky itself. And I saw a very bright light, you know, with a normal path in the sky, but the light was brighter and brighter, and I felt something which is really personal. I knew inside it was for me, it was the message, as a confirmation of the telepathic contact made just before, I mean, at about 7:30. And after it, I have watched my clock, you know, or look at my watch.
Yes.
And I seen that it was 11:30 exactly, you know, between 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
It was really interesting.
Right in between.
Yes. And so after this experience, I was sure that the telepathic communication was available, I mean. So I used to make different projection of my consciousness to their signature, you know, because I used to see them, to see them, to know their vibration,
mm-hmm.
and I began to be concentrated on this signature. And one time I have been in something which is like a welcome room. And they invited me to visit the place where I had been. And I discovered that it was an underground base, which is, under the Great Lakes. I don't know exactly where, you know. But it's probably under the water itself, you know. It means that if you are looking for UFOs, it could be quite impossible to see them because it's far away in the water,
mm-hmm.
or in the on the lake. Well, this underground base is something very structured. There is a huge hangar with many ships. Some are quite small, for about 10 persons, and others are very tall, very very large, for 100 person maybe, you know. But what is important is not really this hangar, which is three times a stadium, you know. It is the organization of the life of the underground base, where you are like a human base. I mean, there are medical rooms, there are welcome rooms, training room too, and even something which is really special for me, or even for the listeners, is what we could call like a church.
A cathedral.
A cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
This is the right term. A cathedral where many ETs come. Even the one which are not from this race.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting to discover that many races come here, and where very high spiritual entities come.
Mm-hmm. But this was a blue-skinned race base.
Yes.
And
yes.
They were inviting other races to be there, or they were exchanging. And you also said there were humans as well.
Yes, that's right. And
now, are humans or ET humans?
Well, you know, after a while, it's quite difficult to define what is an itchy, what is a new man, where do they come from. You know, it's really difficult because they are so experienced in the space-time travel that after a moment, all our human conceptions are false, really false. So in this space, I used to be trained in piloting a craft, but it was like our virtual training.
Virtual training.
Virtual training, yes. So there is so many things to explain about this underground base, but maybe it could be interesting to speak about other subjects.
Yeah, I mean, it is fascinating, and one of the things that I was very impressed was that you said that you were not the only one who was in this pilot training, but you were like the grandfather because many of the other subjects were children.
Yes, it was really impressive for me to discover that I was really have been, you know. And I've seen many children, human one, I mean,
right.
from 5 to 12 approximately, who were they used to come here, and they used to train in piloting. It was really, you know, very odd for me to see these guys are better than me, and how they do this, you know. And I have understood that their mind wasn't troubled by our adult laws. You know, they do this naturally. They use their visualization power very easily.
Well, I think anyone who's seen children use video games with lightning rapidity, being able to make split decisions, it's a marvel to, I stand in awe to see children being able to manipulate these machines. So I can well imagine that when you take it to another level. One of the other things before we move on from the piloting section was that you explained that part of being able to pilot a ship was different than being able to fly an airplane. And your explanation was very interesting. I thought the inside-outside relationship, perhaps you can share that.
Yes, we as human beings see our initial world as the normal world in the universe. That's normal, I mean, because we live in this material world and many things are quite slow to move. So, human conception of piloting is the pilot is in the craft, is in the plane, you know. So, it means that we have to be adapted to the plane. But for the ET's conception, it's radically different. This is just the craft which is inside the pilot. It means that to pilot a craft, they make harmonic states with the pilot. They get the craft vibrating at a certain level, which is exact on an exact state compared with the pilot. It means that when the pilot thinks something, the craft follows. You know, it moves like the thoughts of the pilot. And it's something really strange because there is no distance to cover. We fly directly to the destination because the destination is the state of the pilot, and as the craft is on the same harmonic state, it follows very easily. It's an opposite conception of the travel.
Right. Well, Moody Blues years ago had a line in their song called "Thinking is the best way to travel." In a way, we know that the traverses of space, if we look at it in the material context, millions and millions of light years. And by Einsteinian rules, it would take so much time that, you know, many lifetimes would have to go through in order to get from one end of the space to the other. But such movies as Men in Black jokingly refer to our misconception of time and space and relative to size. You mentioned in your discussion about a spaceship can appear as small as an orb, but when you enter it, it can be as big as a football stadium.
Yes, absolutely.
This is Dolphinville Radio. Welcome aboard.
So I have to speak about rapidly about two experiences. The first one was in 1990, where I have experienced the diagram of a spacecraft, of an alien spacecraft. I was with, so it was a nap, you know. I was executive pilot or commercial pilot, and I was quite tired after 3 days of flight, and I wanted to sleep a little bit. And in this nap, I've been projected in a very strange atmosphere, where I've seen a diagram of a vessel with 3 creatures that it wasn't possible for me to see them, but I felt them very vividly. And I saw like an hologram of this craft, and I was like a genius, you know, in a state of intelligence that it's impossible to reach in my normal life. I'm not a genius, believe me, you know. So, when I've seen this craft, it was really easy to understand how it works. And so they use roughly 4 technologies, and including an oscillator of harmonic state, you know. So another experience was the experience of the 3D time conception. I was in the Réunion Island, and it was about 11:30 p.m. I was asleep, and my wife was awakened yet, and she has heard a very loud noise, you know, and like an helicopter going through the house very, very loudly. And she was really impressed by this this noise, and she looked at outside, you know, the house to see if there is if there was any accident. And she was scared really by this noise. And nobody was outside, you know, except the dogs who was barking, you know, were barking everywhere. So, in the night, at about 4:30, I was awakened suddenly just to write many things about time. So, in fact, I wanted to write about the experience I have just experimented, a state of intelligence, understanding the nature of the universe through the time point of view, mm-hmm. you know. And this is something which was really difficult to explain, I mean, this kind of state, because it's so far away from our normal human state mm-hmm. of understanding that there is no word to explain. So, I have written 3 hours after 4:30 a.m. for 1 week every night at 4:30 a.m. During 3 hours. And after, I have written a whole article to explain the 3D time conception mm-hmm. of the ET science.
Now, when was this? What year?
It was in 2002.
Okay.
On March the 7th.
So this was an accelerated, obviously, from 1990, your first experience. It gave you over 12 years to absorb what that feeling was of expanded consciousness, expanded awareness, genius, as you say. And then this article downloaded, which has been a bit of a controversy, or has been circulated throughout the internet. People who are trying to understand the nature of your time signature understanding causality and some of the things that you explained. And we'll get into this in a little bit. I want the viewer or the listeners to have a little bit of a break here so that we can sort of digest some of the things that we've covered, the personal history of Sean Aderman that has brought us up to this point, because in 2003, this information, 2002, 2003, and now it's 2005, this information has been culminating. And you've just finished this book. We'll come back after a brief break here, and we'll discuss how this has come about in these last few years, and then what the implications for humanity might be. So hang in there. We'll be back in just a minute. You've been listening to Dolphinville Radio, www.dolphinville.com. Thanks for listening. All right, this is Douglas again, back with Jean Aderman. We're talking about some very interesting subjects, and those of you who have been with us and awake realize that we're starting to get into some territory now that is a little bit out of the realm of normal human thinking. One of the experiences that Jean started to share, and I'll ask him to go a little bit further into the concept of 3D time, one of the things that he helped us understand with some wonderful graphics and illustrations in a presentation yesterday, and rather than try to really get you to go that far, we'll just cover sort of briefly. This is a concept that is far different than what we have learned about the nature of time in our 8th grade science classes, and what the insurance companies and the government and the thinkers of our science has led us to believe is the nature of our reality. Well, it is the nature of our reality, but as we are understanding now, there are many realities that are superimposed simultaneously on top of this one. How does that work? Well, if we look at the nature of linear time, past, present, and future, we recognize that that is one way of viewing a reality matrix. It is a reality matrix of a causality. There is another way of looking at time, and science has reduced things down to the microscopic level, and we recognize what is called the periodic table of elements that make up all of the compositions of the material world. That periodic time is something that happens with electrons and protons, and it has nothing to do with the linear concept of causality. When we talk about the 3D time, we're talking about periodic time. Mm-hmm. And although it may be a bit of a stretch, maybe you can elaborate how those three levels of periodic time affect our 3D reality and how we might get a handle on that.
Yes, in fact, I've learned from it is that the nature of the time is really different than the one we accept normally. You know, in science today, we have a linear time, which is, a topology of the time. We have only one dimension according to the special relativity of Einstein, which has a centenary age. And what I have learned is that time has three dimensions, as the space has three dimensions too. The three dimensions are the sense of the time, which is the arrow of the time, the density of the time, which is the speed of the time flow, and the present of the time. So the present is not exactly what we think about it, you know, because it's quite difficult to know if we are really in the present of the time. You know, when we think we are in the present, it's already the past. Mm-hmm. And when we think about the next present, it's not already the present itself. So what I've learned is that our consciousness travels in the 3D time I've just spoken about, and our world, our physical world, is one of the space-time layers that we live in. And our consciousness is just traveling through the different planes of existence, and we see the causality from a point of view which allows us to see the causality. So today the problem of science is to well understand what is the entropy. The entropy is known as to be the result of the linearity of the time, but in fact we have lost what the ancients were speaking about a long time ago, which is the periodic time. Mm-hmm. So a periodic time is a cycle of a time. Unfortunately for the science today, it's against the causality. Mm-hmm. Because a periodic time is the time where the initial point is also the final one. Mm-hmm. It means that there is no relation of cause and effect, you know, when an event occur. So, what is the periodic time? It's something which is, in fact, a time quanta, you know, and we see the world with our linear time because we live in many layers in the same time, and it could be confusing to try to be concentrated on only one period of time. So we have today the special relativity, which says that when we approach the light speed, the time expands and the space is compressed. Mm-hmm. It means that when we are close to the light speed, we are very small and we live in an expanded time. But Einstein thought about the movement alone, not about the state of the matter. Mm-hmm. Quantum physics tells us that the matter has different states, which are quantified, you know, and there are many quantum leaps of state. And today, science does not explain why the matter has such a quantum state or quantum behavior. Mm-hmm. And the only answer is that the time is periodic. And the best evidence of it is the state of electrons and protons themselves, which are supposed to be the roots of the matter, you know, mm-hmm. but they don't match with the linearity, with the causality itself, because they are or they are not. There is no transformation. They are alive or they are dead. You know, it exists or it doesn't,
mm-hmm.
or they doesn't, or they don't. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So it means that the problem of the nature of the time is to imagine the time as a different speed of flow of the time. So it means that when you want to travel with a craft, in the space, in fact, you don't use the inertial conceptions of our material world. The it is used to compress the space to increase the time flow.
Hmm.
And in doing this, they multiply the time quanta. It means that what I've learned is the main law of the universe, which is the absolute relativity, and which consists in a simple sentence, which is the less you have space, the more you have time.
Mm.
But you have to understand time as a quantity of time quanta. It means cycles, you know. And we live, in fact, in a stroboscopic time. We sometimes live in our microscopic world, sometimes not. So it means, you know, this is like the movie mechanism. You know, we can fill 24 pictures a second. You know, it means that we are not able to feel or to perceive times which are quite smaller than this, you know. And the principle of the quantum physics is based on these periodic times.
Mm-hmm.
What we know from the quantum physics is that we have a limit of perception, you know. Even with our instrument, we are unable to understand what occur between each quantum leaps. You know, this is something which is really strong to understand, because so what is the vacuum, you know? So there is another question which is very difficult to understand, is why the determinism of the physical or mechanical classical laws of our material world comes from the random, from the inability to know exactly the position of the energy state of a particle.
Mm-hmm.
It means that our deterministic laws come from something which is undetermined. I mean,
right. No, you can't determine it because it's coming from a chaotic base.
That's right. It means that we are made of random. It's something which is very difficult to understand, and in the same time, really difficult to accept too.
Mm-hmm.
So, it means that in fact, the nature of the time, according to what I have learned from the ETs, is only a matter of point of view. It means that if we see the matter from our material world, we see the material world just because the time flow is slow. If you accelerate the time, you will see other things. And what is really difficult to understand is to accept that at the atomic scale, our physical world does not exist, you know. We perceive our material world because of the space and time scales. That's all. So the ET technology consists in varying the time flows. It means in having different time densities. In doing this, they compress the universe to travel through the galaxies and to reach their destinations. So, it's, I mean, quite difficult to explain precisely all these conceptions because we need some equations that I have proposed in my book, The Science of Extraterrestrial, which is being translated in English for the moment, and it's available in French.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that. The listener, I'm sure, if the listener is anything like me, it's very difficult to get your head around some of the concepts that we're discussing because they are non-linear in nature. And by human nature, we like to understand things in rational ways, and yet you're saying that the very basis of this is chaotic or non-rational, and so quantum physics becomes enigmatic for most people. Although we seem to be more acquainted with it, and more people are talking about quanta and quantum physics and how it's a relative to what our material world is, I think it is the key to understand how we could traverse such vast areas of space by condensing it. And some people would be able to at least grasp that. But rather than getting involved in some of the more details of the 3D time theorems that the ETs have shared, I think I'd like to move the discussion to where this is taking us. First of all, why do you feel that you were selected, and are you alone, the only one who's been selected like you right now, who's come forward and has at least made your name by making these proclamations and gathering information? And also, you've had some repercussions because of that. So the two areas that I'd like to sort of move to and wrap up our conversation today is, A, why were you chosen? And B, the nature of where this is leading us as humanity. And then you spoke very briefly about the cosmic battle. And so those are areas that I'd really love to cover with our audience.
Yeah. Yes. Why have been chosen? In fact, this is the opposite. I mean, I choose to go to the ETs. I mean, to meet them. Mm-hmm. It's a choice which is quite difficult because we used to trust in our material world, and ETs are not available in this material world. I mean, they are most of the time invisible, and they don't really choose someone. Someone chooses to go to the ET conceptions to accept their presence on Earth and around Earth too. But what is new with my experiences is that an explanation is available now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can trust their presence because of these explanations, because of the new understanding of their conceptions. What we have to remember is that according to many scientists today, the vacuum of the world contain many informations, you know, due to the lack of the entropy that is not appearing in the material world. So it could be quite long to explain why, you know, it's relatively close to the matter of the black holes, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said also that they're very interested in humanity at this time because of our use of nuclear weapons.
Yes, that's right. What we have to know is that the use of nuclear weapons is something very dramatic for ETs because we enter their field of life. Mm-hmm. They are in space-time layer where time is expanded. When we beat a core of atom, we make like time earthquake, you know, mm-hmm. Or earthquake in their field.
Sure.
And it means that since the middle of the 20th century, we have made many errors with quantum physics, and many ETs were warned about our presence and our technology level. You know, what they want to do is to explain and to alert humanity that we are interacting with us, but in the wrong way. Nuclear weapons are very dangerous for them, and even for us, for sure. But this is one of the reasons sightings have been multiplied since the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the most important message they want us to understand. And they want to interact in a peaceful way. I speak about the malevolent ETs, of course.
There are others. There are malevolent and benevolent.
Yes, that's right. So the difference between the two categories is that the malevolent ETs want to dominate humanity, because humanity has a lack of will, you know, and of wisdom too. So instead of explaining humanity's the way or the path of wisdom, they prefer to dominate and to get humanity in a certain way of life where they may continue to dominate them or all.
Manipulate.
Yeah, manipulate. The benevolent ETs want to give us the opportunity to be upgraded, you know, with wisdom, with understanding of the world we're in, and in going to a higher level of space-time field. I mean, it means that our consciousness could be in a higher time density,
mm-hmm.
as we do in our dreams, for example. Mm-hmm. I just want to add that our dreams are real,
mm-hmm.
but we often create informations, I mean, pictures, sensations, instead of receiving them without any judgment. That is why our dreams are made of our fears, our wishes, and so on.
Emotion.
Because this is the ego way of life, if you want to accept. But sometimes we can receive information from these higher time densities if we forget our ego and accept that we live in other space-time space-time planes,
mm-hmm.
I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
So they have many messages for us, I mean. But what I have to add is that the next years will be the theater of new conception and new events too, and humanity has to be prepared for these events.
Mm-hmm.
That is why I do work with Michael Senna, who has well understood the problem of the exopolitics. Exopolitics is the same job as the exobiology, I mean, but for the politic field.
Mm-hmm.
What is certain today is that our governments know many things about ETs, and they interact, for some of them, with ETs. But they don't want to share their knowledge due to the fact that their power has to stay available for them, not for the public, not for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's something very important to understand. Each individual, each person has to understand that we are personally able to interact with ETs in having a new behavior of life, in our life, in being aware of our our real world when we dream, when we think, when we have emotions. And unfortunately for science today, emotions are not in the equations, but they exist. So we are able to be self-empowered and to respect each other, even the ETs also, I mean. Mm-hmm. And we have to be to want by ourselves to be in touch with them.
Hmm. Well, this is a wonderful message in and of itself. Self-empowerment starts with our own ability to take responsibility for our actions, to know that we have the power to change the world around us. And as you say, we have the power to invite in this experience into our personal life. It's not something that will land on the White House lawn, because there's no way that that information will be assimilated by the public at large. And as in the movie Contact, it happens one individual at a time. And when asked why, they said, I don't know, it's just that's the way it is.
Oh, yes, but in fact, you know, contacts are individual because each person has to be to choose the his or her own fate.
Yes.
You know, this is something. This is a cosmic law.
Mm-hmm.
If you are able to choose your own fate, to create your future,
mm-hmm.
you can enter the cosmic federation, if you want to call it like this. I mean, we are surrounded by many and many beings, you know, in the universe. They come here, they are still invisible, just because in the state where they are, they have so much information,
right,
than we can get in our material world.
Right.
This is why they are so rare in our physical world, because they are not interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's better to be in a state where they have more freedom,
mm-hmm.
more energy, and more interactions.
I would assume it would be dangerous as well to come down and be to a hostile planet where the first reaction typically is to throw rocks or shoot bombs at something that we don't understand. This seems to be what we have evidence of anyway. Well, I think we'll let the audience absorb what they've heard. I want to thank you very much for sharing this information, and just to let the people know who are listening, just to be in the presence of Jean here, gives me a personal confidence, something that I haven't quite experienced before. And even though I was just recently hosting the ET conference here, where 18 different speakers came from all over the world to share their stories, there's something different about the nature of this material, in that it has a ring of personal authenticity, and that he's not trying to make me understand or convince me of anything, but there is a certain confidence in the way that he presents it that lets me know that he knows the material is real. And I think that's something that you'll have to be experienced for yourself. So there will be some information. You told me that there is a film or a film crew that you'll be working with in England, I think. There will be more material in addition to the book coming out that will help share this information. The book itself will have marvelous illustrations and graphics that will help people come to terms with 3D time reality, and also more details as to some of these personal experiences. So I would encourage everybody to look. Now, is there a website that we can go to right now to read some of this information? For example, the 3D article in English. Where would we find that on the internet right now?
So you can go to the exopoliticsinstitute.org,
mm-hmm.
To discover the matters of the exopolitics, and have a special website page where it's possible to have some articles, some papers, and even to check my professional credentials.
Mm-hmm.
No? So you could have a look on the English version, of course,
mm-hmm.
of these papers, and to be to go deeper in the concern we're speaking about, especially about the time nature, mm-hmm. or the nature of the time.
I have a sense, it's intuitive, and I've heard rumors of the fact that you may be spending a little more time in Hawaii. That would be our pleasure, and it may give us an opportunity to explore further on another future show, to go into depth with some of the more information that you have, and I'm sure that the listeners would be happy to hear some of more details on these stories. I know I would personally, and look forward to those opportunities. So in the meantime, John Aderman will be presenting publicly here in Hawaii at the Sheraton Hotel in Kailua Kona on Monday, August the 15th. It is an evening presentation. Check your local resources for that if you are listening to this show in that time frame. If not, look for him on the website exopoliticsinstitute.org, which is a website put up by Dr. Michael Sala. There will be more information coming along. I'm sure that as this interview hits the airwaves, it could well be inundated with other interviewers who want to be able to speak to you and listen to this information. And as you become more acquainted with speaking this in English, which I appreciate you're going through the trouble of finding the right words and helping us to understand it, it'll be probably more opportunities to share this information with a much wider audience. So thank you so much, Jean. It's been fun playing in the ocean with you. You're a marvelous swimmer. The dolphins love you. And from a personal standpoint, we're in the middle of this ET contact. It's actually Meet the Andromedas workshop at Joan Oceans. There are 15 participants. We have all transcended into accelerated states as a result of being together and sharing our many levels or multiple dimensional personalities and understanding the intelligence of our emotional bodies and being able to let go of a lot of the restrictions. So you've been a great help, and we're looking forward to more in the future. So anything you would care to add to the audience before we sign off?
Yes, I would like to share with the public, you know, and I wish each individual will take for himself the experiences and the new paradigm of the time of nature explained on the book and on the site. I mean that never exist outside the experience alone.
Very good. Well, thank you, Jean, and for everybody who's listening, this is Douglas Dolphinus. I'll be with you again next time, so until then, be well, swim free. I'll see ya.